How's it going, everyone? It's time for another edition of Strictly Business, presented to you exclusively by AdFreeShows.com and Podcast Heat. I'm John Alba, and this is episode 2 of our public debut here with Strictly Business with Eric Bischoff. So without further ado, let's bring in the man of the hour, Mr. Bischoff himself. Eric, we're public, baby.
We're public. We're going public. Not in the way I wish we were, but kind of technically we're still going public. You could say that.
It's really great to be able to bring this podcast to a much bigger audience. It really became a hit with Ad-Free Shows. Last week, we rolled it out publicly for the first time with our friend Mike Weber, who I thought was such a fantastic guest, and told us all about the work he's been doing with Fight. But now we're here, and we are rocking and rolling week in, week out on Strictly Business. I want to ask you, Eric, I want to tee you up properly. What can fans who might be new to this podcast expect from Strictly Business?
Well, before we get into that, I also want to thank our family over at AdFreeShows.com because, you know, it was their input over at AdFreeShows.com that made, you know, us realize that, wow, this is actually something that could probably work. So thank you so much for that support and being so vocal about it, because it gave us confidence to do what we're doing now. So thank you to AdFreeShows.com family members. Yeah, if you're new to this show, what can you expect? I guess what I hope people will get more often than not is some really interesting guests from the business side of the entertainment business, specifically those who have either involvement in the professional wrestling industry on the business side of it, or people who, while they may not have a role in professional wrestling in terms of the entertainment industry, are in positions like programming and ad sales and, you know, arena management and all the various components, like Mike Weber was last week. You know, the pay-per-view component of the professional wrestling industry has been one of the pillars of its success, really, since the 80s or early 90s. And no, 80s. So being able to talk to people who are immersed in that industry, whether or not they have their fingers in the professional wrestling pie or not, I think we can learn a lot. And I think our listeners and the viewers and fans and supporters of professional wrestling will have more information and a different perspective. And my hope is that as a result, they'll appreciate the genre even more than they already do.
My favorite part about doing this show with you is whenever you clearly are so invested in a conversation that it's evident that you're learning. And if you're learning, I know that means that our audience is learning in the process. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the fun part, man, discovering. And here's the other cool thing about this particular podcast. And by the way, this is the business of entertainment. We just happen to be talking fairly regularly about the professional wrestling component of it, because that's been my background and your interest. But this is probably, and this is what's really entertaining. One of our guests in the next couple of weeks is a musician who was just nominated again. He's a multi-Grammy Award winner already and was just recently nominated. And we're going to talk to him about the parallels within the music industry and the professional wrestling industry, because music creates emotion. Mm-hmm. Wrestling creates emotion. Now, they manifest differently because of the nature of the product, but the elements of emotion and building emotion is probably more interesting to wrestling fans than they realize right now. Tune in. You'll hear about it.
We've had professional storytellers on the show in the past. We've had people from independent wrestling promotions. And we had Mike Weber, as he said last week. It's a really, really fascinating
executives look from NBC Universal Streaming.
Which was awesome. That was one of our first episodes, and it was awesome. Go back in our archives if you haven't on adfreeshows.com, and you can check us out every week here. In weeks where Eric and I don't have a guest, we'll be discussing different elements of the industry. We've talked about current events as they happened, if they pique Eric's interest or if they're getting everyone talking, or we talk about some more general discussions about the industry, like what we're going to be doing here today on Strictly Business. But if you have not subscribed yet, please make sure you do so already. This is dropping every single week on Eric's 83 Weeks feed. So if you're subscribed to the 83 Weeks feed, right away you will get that. And I'd also be remiss, Eric, before we hop into our conversation, if I didn't mention your book rollout has been amazing, man. How's all that been going?
It's really cool. But I'm going to be honest, it's also, I'm a little, and I don't know why, because it's a great book. I finally was able to sit down and read it cover to cover last night, because over the last couple of weeks, of course, Guy Evans and I have been going back and forth before the actual launch, you know, polishing it, making sure every comma was in the right place and all of that. And I've been reading the book, you know, like I started out in chapter 13. And then a couple of days later, Guy would send me, okay, take a look at chapter 5. So the way all of the contents of the book was, you know, again, this was a result of 8 months or a year's worth of work, but seeing it on paper for the first time, I was kind of like bouncing around in my own timeline. And it was hard to get a feel for the book from cover to cover when you're looking at segments of it kind of out of sequence. But last night I finally read it, and I'm so proud of it. So proud of the work that Guy did, because while literally every word in the book is, they're my words, right? It wasn't like I'd said, oh, I woke up that morning and I was pissed. And then Guy said, I don't like that. Let's call it something else. You know, it wasn't any of that. But it was really, really well done. And I think Guy did such an artful job of presenting the last 15 years of my life within the wrestling industry, but really juxtaposing that against what has become a really interesting journey for me over the last 5 or 6 years in particular, about really learning to become grateful for so many of the things that I did and was able to be a part of, is a better way to say that. It's just a journey. That's it. It's not just a wrestling book. It's a journey about one guy who's, you know, getting to that point in his life where he can sit back and kind of look back and decide what was good and what wasn't. And I've learned how to really appreciate things that I didn't appreciate before. And that's really what the book is all about.
Well, I cannot wait to take a deep dive into Grateful. If you haven't, guys, get your hands on it now. Congratulations to you, Eric. It's a 15-year odyssey these past 15 years for you. You've been face-to-face with the likes of Conrad Thompson, Chrissy Olsen, and now, unfortunately, you're looking up across against me. So I'm stuck with you. You're stuck with me. But I love doing the show with you, and I'm grateful for it. You want to talk some business, Eric? You ready to get down to it?
Fired up.
Let's do it. So this week's episode, I thought it would be awesome to pick your brain on celebrity and outside involvement in professional wrestling. The impetus for this, we saw what Logan Paul was able to do at the Saudi Arabia show, Crown Jewel for WWE, that caught everyone's attention. And he went super viral when he took a video of himself doing a frog splash to the outside against Roman Reigns, where he main evented. And everyone was talking about what a superstar Logan Paul looked like. So there has to be significant value in celebrity involvement in bringing in these outside names to the industry. But I want to take a deeper dive into why it's so valuable to professional wrestling. So you're someone who has ventured into this territory multiple times over the course of your career.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When did it first become an idea for you that, okay, we can incorporate pop culture more into this crazy world that is pro wrestling?
You know, honestly, John, for me, now this is looking back, okay? This probably wasn't occurring to me in the moment, you know, going back to the 90s. But pop culture was always a thing. as far back as I can remember, into my teens at least, I probably wasn't paying attention as a little kid, but you know, I go back to being a fan in Minneapolis, being a fan of AWA, and Vern Gagne would constantly bring in professional football players from the NFL, because you know, Vern had a lot of deep connections to the Minnesota Vikings and the University of Minnesota Athletic Association and all that. So, you know, every time I turned around, there was a celebrity of sorts that was a part of my weekly wrestling fix in Minneapolis. And then you, you know, fast forward now into the 80s and look at, you know, what Vince McMahon did in the WWE with Liberace and, you know, so many of the celebrities that, you know, were a big part of some of the early WrestleManias, you know, Cyndi Lauper, Mr. T, come on, that it all existed previously. I don't know what year WrestleMania 5 was, but you know, we're going back a long time now. And I think in those cases, during that period of time, let's call it from, you know, 70s into the 80s, you know, when cable television exploded and WWE was becoming a national thing instead of a regional thing, and Vince McMahon had this vision of becoming mainstream entertainment as opposed to the local territory mentality that was so prevalent for since the beginning of time prior to that, for all intents and purposes. But I think at that time, we're talking about, again, 70s, 80s, it was getting attention. Getting the media, who wouldn't normally talk about professional wrestling, because talking about professional wrestling was akin to talking about porn. Mm. Not quite as bad, just a notch or two up. You know, if you notice, you think back to when you were a kid, Playboy magazine was always eye level, but, you know, pro wrestling, you know, world, you know, or whatever Bill Apter's titles were down at the bottom of the rack, right? They were getting hit with mops all night, you know, when they were cleaning the store. And I think some of the, in the beginning, during that period of time, bringing in prominent celebrities was really a mechanism to help mainstream the product so that media outside of your traditional wrestling media, which at that time basically didn't exist, would start paying attention to your product. And the real reason you wanted to achieve that was because advertisers and sponsors would start looking in your product differently if they saw big name celebrities that they were used to seeing in general entertainment associating with what was typically a non-media event. All of a sudden, that non-media event is now a media event and becomes more valuable. And I think that logic, that strategy, was prevalent all the way up until... And again, you got to give credit where credit is due. Not that it hadn't been done before. I don't want to suggest that. Other promoters before had used celebrities and professional football players in matches. But I think, to be honest, mainstream media probably didn't know about it until, again, WWE brought in some NFL players. I don't even remember what WrestleMania that was. Lawrence Taylor, for example. Lawrence Taylor was as hot in many respects during that heyday as Dennis Rodman was when I used Dennis Rodman, you know, in the late 90s, when Rodman was in the middle of the NBA playoffs. he'd play basketball one night and come over and wrestle with me the other. And then we're getting a look at, you know, LT, you know, going back to whatever.
WrestleMania 11.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's changed. And now look where we are today. And I'm sorry, I'm, you know, talking so much here, because I'm sure you have questions and I'm not letting you ask them. It's one of the casualties of doing a show with me. If you're talking to me about something I like, I just don't shut the hell up, and I'm sorry. But I think if you look now, because you brought it up, you know, I think Logan Paul, Bad Bunny previously are now going from, oh wow, big celebrity performers that actually bring a tremendous amount of social media following. They're actually, like, look awesome in the ring. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So what started out as kind of a media play has ended up being athletes. It's crazy.
I was going to ask you about that later on, but since you brought it up, I may as well now. it's almost as if the standard for what a celebrity contributes to a wrestling event has changed now. There is an expectation that if a celebrity is going to be involved in a wrestling show, that if they're going to get physical, they got to look good. They can't look like a celebrity, average Joe who's never stepped foot in a wrestling ring. They have to be able to go. And we saw the amount of training that went into Bad Bunny. We saw the amount of training that went into Logan Paul, and look what the payoff was. Even to a lesser extent, Stephen Amell a few years ago, too, who I thought did a great job. For you, on the outside looking in, seeing how that bar has been raised, what kind of impression does that make on you, and how does it regulate the status quo of bringing celebrities in from that point forward?
You know what's really funny is, again, I mean, you look at some of the celebrities that I used in WCW when during that period of time where WCW was really hot. I mean, we had Charles Barkley on WCW. We had other people on WCW, but we were floundering before Nitro, so it didn't really matter, right? But in Nitro, for example, Dennis Rodman, I brought him up earlier. Dennis looked great compared to what celebrities typically would look like.
Right.
When they perform. Dennis Rodman was kind of a freak in that regard. He was heads and tails above most, but, you know, Kevin Green was right there behind him. You know, Steve Mongo McMichael, you know, who wrestled pretty much full time. He didn't just make an appearance. He ended up wrestling full time. And, we can dissect his wrestling skills in the ring, but he was a great performer and he was committed to it. And I, for one, will also put over some of the stuff that Steve McMichael, Mongo really did in the ring. I think the only, hiccups from time to time was when Steve, tried to do too much and was doing things he wasn't 100% comfortable with yet. But, it kind of changed. Celebrities went from the Liberace version, "Hi, everybody, I'm here," to "Let's get in the ring and bang, let's make this fun." And now we're looking at Bad Bunny and Logan Paul, and I think the evolution that we've seen has manifested something that I didn't think would ever happen. Whereas before, in my experience, going and getting Dennis Rodman and getting, whomever, Jay Leno. Well, Jay Leno was a little different, but getting any of these other celebrities, it was a negotiation. I had to make it really attractive for them. It was a financial decision as well as, hey, this would be fun. Or, hey, I know this guy in WCW. I would kind of want to do something with him. But at the end of the day, we were courting said celebrity.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's now, I think because of Bad Bunny and Logan Paul, you're going to have the next generation of hot celebrities. And can you think of any two hotter celebrities in terms of their social media impact and their cultural positioning than Bad Bunny and Logan Paul? Now because they set such a phenomenal example and had so much success, I think you're going to have celebrities go, well, I want to do that. I want to do what Bad Bunny did. I want to do what Logan Paul did. And if you're Paul Levesque on the other end of the phone, you're going to be able to essentially say, well, cool, we'd love to have you do that. Here's what it's going to take. And now you've got people aspiring to be in that position as opposed to doing it as kind of a favor or maybe for fun.
And what timing with WrestleMania going to Los Angeles this coming year too. The opportunities are incredible on that front. But you brought up a really good point that I wanted to tee you up on. Whereas in the mid to late 90s, you guys recognized, hey, celebrities can bring a lot to us. I think there is somewhat of a paradigm shift there where now celebrities recognize there is value in professional wrestling to what it can do towards their brand. What do you think a celebrity, obviously you're not in their shoes, but in theory, what kind of value do you think pro wrestling can offer a celebrity who might want to dip their toes into that?
I think one of the things that wrestling has always been able to offer is a very unique, loyal, passionate audience. Now, that audience is typically male. Now, this is all changing, right? I don't spend, days every week studying ratings demographics, so I'm generalizing here, but I think I'm pretty accurate. We're still talking about a product that is generally males 25 to 54. I know the target audience is 18 to 49, and that's what everybody likes to talk about. But if you look at the probably the core of the audience is probably 25 to 54, if I'm right. And male, almost probably, depending on which audience you're looking at, whether it's WWE or AEW, you're probably looking at 60-40 male. And you're talking about a socioeconomic demographic. And that's the one thing we don't hear much about, right? In the peripheral wrestling media, as I politely refer to it. Because this is a podcast and it's a sophisticated environment here. This isn't like my typical down in the trenches, 83 weeks where I just get gritty as heck. I'm going to try to raise my game here for our advertisers. So we have a more sophisticated audience for the show. We need to have a more sophisticated presentation. But that's also a great demo for anybody that's in the movie industry. Whether you're promoting a movie, and if you go back and you look at the history of advertising in professional wrestling, which would be a great subject, by the way, someday for Strictly Business. But one of the things that really kept professional wrestling afloat, I think, through the 80s and the 90s was the advertising that came from movie studios. Because if it's an action film, which typically are, there's more of them than there are romantic comedies, for example. And they usually came out in the summertime, right? A lot of ad dollars were spent on Chuck Norris and Sylvester Stallone and Steven Seagal and Rob Van Dam movies. Did I say Rob Van Dam? I meant John Van Dam. hey, Rob, that one's for you, brother.
Sure, he'd love a Rob Van Dam movie. That would work. People would watch.
But now, what does that mean today? That means today, if you're an up-and-coming action star, I don't know, kind of like, not The Rock, because he's no longer up and coming. He up and came and went. He's at the mountaintop. There's no more coming and going anywhere. He's got a permanent residence there as the highest paid movie star in the world, last I checked. But it's a great environment for an up and coming actor or a studio with a movie that they really want to break and they really believe in, that has a very same demographic composition as professional wrestling does. It's a great home for that. Now, we've seen Bad Bunny do it. He's music. Logan Paul's just Logan Paul, social media. But I don't think it's going to be long before we see some up-and-coming, you know, action star doing what Bad Bunny did and Logan Paul has done, because it's a great place to do it.
There's also the social aspect where WWE, AEW, these bigger wrestling brands have pretty good social outreach. And I would say that there are opportunities for these celebrities to maximize that outreach when they step in a ring. And what do I mean by that? Well, take a look at this graphic here regarding Bad Bunny and his Google Trends. You see that spike right there, Eric?
Mm-hmm.
That spike, that is the most amount of interest, that number 100 represents. This is when they had the most interest in terms of search terms on Google. And if you look at that date there, April 11th to April 17th, 2021, that would date back to WrestleMania, when Bad Bunny had his match with Damian Priest against The Miz.
That's really interesting.
So look at the relevance in search terms right there. It's not even close compared to some of the others. And this is a guy who is selling out stadiums everywhere he goes, but it was his work with WWE that sparked the most interest. And maybe he was able to leverage that as well. And again, you see there, I believe he was in the Royal Rumble this past year. So if you were to go to earlier in 2022, right there around January, that's when the Royal Rumble was. So you see a spike in the interest in Bad Bunny because he appeared in the Royal Rumble. What do you make of stuff like that?
I think it just supports everything we just discussed. I think at some point, some data analyst at a movie studio or television network is going to go, okay, well, we're building a star, because the entertainment business, movies, television, they build stars just like professional, well, not just like professional wrestling does, but building stars is important. And I think it's not going to be long before you have some data analysts looking at trends, just like you presented here on Strictly Business. thanks to our producer, Steve Kaufman, and you for finding that information. That just supports everything we just said, right? Hey, if you want to get your music over, and hey, Bad Bunny, I know it's going to sound crazy. I know I'm pretending I'm Bad Bunny's manager, okay? Hey, Bad Bunny, look, you're rocking it. You're selling out arenas. You've got your audience. We are great, but we kind of want to grow it. So I got an idea. Let's expose you and your music to an entire audience, one of the biggest worldwide audiences of any genre in the world, all over the world, for that matter. We're going to get you involved in the WWE. Now, Bad Bunny's going to go, I can't speak Spanish. So he's going to say something like this, but he'll say in Spanish, are you crazy? What are you thinking? Wrestling. I'm a musician. I'm not a wrestler. No, but Bunny, sit down and look at these numbers. Ooh, what if we get 25% or 10% or 2% of that audience over there? We get 2 or 10 or 5% of their audience, and we get to bring them over to our side. And then the next time you're touring in their cities or in their countries, in this case, you've got a bigger fan base, which you know what that means, Bunny. Right? We're bigger. That's what that conversation is going to sound like, only in Spanish.
And on top of that, WWE was promoting his tour as well. It's free promotion for the tour, and you're pushing tickets through that. That's huge. And if you're saying to me, well, John, Bad Bunny is a mega star. He supersedes everything. He's an outlier. Well, let's look at Logan Paul's trends right now from the last 12 months alone as we pull those up. And Logan is one of those guys where you look back rather to that first peak, which is January, which is when word first came out that he was going to be working with WWE. That second big peak there is in April. What's in April, Eric? WrestleMania. And then that third highest peak, the next one there, it was SummerSlam, and then the most recent one being Crown Jewel.
I think some of those other peaks probably coincided with the announcements, mm-hmm. or just involvement in the show, where he may not have been in a match, but all of a sudden we know he's going to become part of WWE. There was a lot of chatter about that prior to some of those big peaks.
Absolutely. So this is not an outlier. And then I even took a look, too, at Ronda Rousey's, because Ronda Rousey was somebody that crossed over from the UFC world into, obviously, being a relatively full-time WWE superstar, and her absolute peaks were in January of 2018. What happened in January of 2018? She made her surprise debut at the Royal Rumble, and that was her highest. Her next highest was WrestleMania that year, April. These are not coincidental trends, Eric.
Oh, no, I don't. I absolutely don't think you'd have to be kind of stubborn and choosing to be ignorant in the true definition, meaning lack of information or knowledge, to ignore that. And it is. You've got three good examples there. And again, I think that just backs up that the point or the thought that in the future, you're going to probably see more and more celebrity involvement, but you're going to see higher and higher qualities of participation and depth of participation. Mm-hmm. Because keep in mind, back in the day, yeah, you'd bring in a celebrity, but you couldn't really do much with them because, A, they weren't capable of doing much. You didn't have a lot of time with them to train them. They didn't really want to be trained to do a lot. They wanted to go in, have a little fun, throw a punch, get a punch, fall on their fanny or whatever they're going to do, and then go home. That's what they wanted to do. Now, I think that's going to change, and you're going to see higher and higher and higher levels of participation. And I think the impact, the positive impact for both, in this case, WWE, as we've been talking about, and the celebrity, they're both going to benefit even more than they ever have.
I also think there's even somewhat of a correlation. Maybe I'm reaching here a little bit, but Bad Bunny grew up a wrestling fan. Logan Paul grew up a wrestling fan. These are two guys who are in their mid to late 20s. When they grow up wrestling fans, it's the hottest period of wrestling ever. It's your era of wrestling that you helped run. And wrestling in pop culture is extremely relevant at that time. More people were watching pro wrestling than Monday Night Football some nights. So when people grow up on that, inherently it becomes part of a shared experience from their childhood. And if they have the opportunity to maybe participate in that later on in life, well, they recognize, well, there's some merit here for this on my brand. Again, just speculating, but I think there could be some merit to that. As
I don't know if perhaps it's hard to project that or gauge it, but at the very least, it's, well, I grew up watching this. You know, it's one of the reasons why do you think I live in the middle of nowhere, Wyoming? Really, if the wind is blowing hard enough on the right day from the right direction, I could throw a Frisbee from my deck and it would end up in Yellowstone National Park. Now, why do you think I live here? Because I grew up watching Westerns. I mean, I was a kid in Detroit, you know, and I think anybody that grows up loving something, watching something, begins to identify with that thing. And then when the opportunity arises, as it did for me and my family in 1998, to go, hey, well, instead of just, you know, fantasizing about it, let's build a house there. Or if you're Bad Bunny or Logan Paul, hey, instead of just being a fan of it, going, wow, wouldn't that be cool? Now I've got enough credibility and leverage. I can actually go do it and it'll be fun. I think growing up and watching it and being a fan of it is a big deal. And I think the more we see the Bad Bunnies and the Logan Pauls of the world, the more attention they get, the more other celebrities or potential future celebrities are going to look at this product and go, hell yeah, I'll do that because it's fun.
I think one of the elements of the Logan Paul Roman Reigns match that made it so special was you knew Logan Paul wasn't being Roman Reigns, but what if Logan Paul?
You know, I'll tell you what, John,
Roman Reigns.
I actually talked to Conrad Thompson. I was going out of town or doing something. Yeah, I had an appearance out of town, so I knew I wasn't going to be watching it. And Conrad and I talked about it. Conrad Thompson, of course, the grand poobah of the ad-free shows, Podcast Heat Empire, the podfather, if you will. The
of
reason
course.
We're even here, for that matter. But I talked to Conrad, and we compared notes. He goes, what do you think's going to happen? You know, Crown Jewel. And I said, I don't know. But like you, I was, there's no way they're going to be. You know, first of all, it's, you know, Crown Jewel makes more money than any pay-per-view they do. Actually, it's made one Crown Jewel makes more money than all the WrestleManias they've ever done. I mean, it's kind of freaking nuts, right? But insane. It's not a tentpole pay-per-view. Financially, it is, but mm-hmm. It's not WrestleMania. It's not Royal Rumble. It's not Survivor Series. You know, there's a couple throughout the year that are considered tentpole events. So when I'm talking to Conrad, I said, man, I don't know, but, you know, it's probably business as usual as they're building up for whatever else they're building up for. And Conrad said, no, I think there's a chance that Logan beats him. And in my mind, I'm going, well, that's crazy, but it's Conrad, so I'm going to listen because he's really smart.
right.
And as he laid it out to me, it made so much sense and did lead to, you know, the next step. That I actually hung up the phone and went, damn, now I want to watch it. And I was keeping track of it while I was out of town because I wanted to know if Conrad was right. It's pretty fun.
Well, it played into the match really well where, like I said, on the surface, you knew, he's not beating him. But then all of a sudden you're like, well, wait a minute. Logan Paul's really good at this. And if he shows that he's committed to working more events, imagine the brand.
And not to interrupt you, yep. And it could make for a really good storyline moving forward.
Yeah.
Because it implicated other people and kind mm-hmm. of brought other people to the next level in that story. That's the part that made me go, okay, it's not just a fun idea, but everybody kind of rises with an interesting tide at that point.
I was going to say, then it becomes, okay, well, look at the merit of having a guy with the social media outreach, the YouTube outreach, the general outreach that Logan Paul has, and he's carrying around your championship.
Yeah.
I know a lot of traditionalists would cringe at that, but things change. I don't know what your thoughts are on that. The merit.
No, I was just thinking about David Arquette, right? As you were saying, I was thinking.
Well, a little different.
Maybe deep down inside, everybody's going, yeah, but remember what happened when they did that with Arquette?
Yeah, little different.
A lot different. I want to be sure we're not beating up on Mr. Arquette.
Of course not.
David Arquette was 100% committed. He would have trained. Now he's, you know, he's a movie star. So I'm in a movie. A Las Vegas movie. There were a bunch of criminals in Las Vegas. I can't remember what it was, but Arquette was in it with Kevin Costner. It was a great movie. So, I mean, David was a legitimate working actor at that point, still is, but he didn't care. He's ready to go in there and jump off cages and do all kinds of silly shit. He didn't care. He was committed. But we didn't train him. We didn't give him the time. We didn't build a story. That was how you don't use a celebrity, by the way, just for the record.
Well, so our topic before was talking about how, like, now WWE doesn't really have to court these celebrities as much as they would have used to. So I'm curious, in your experiences prior to that being the case, how did you find out if a celebrity was a wrestling fan and would have potential interest in collaborating with you?
I mentioned Charles Barkley. Why did Charles Barkley, you know, do his WCW Saturday Night Show with Ric Flair? Because he was friends with Ric Flair. You know, why did a lot of the celebrities that participate back then participate? Because, yeah, they watched wrestling as a kid growing up, but yeah, I'm really friends with that guy over there. Mm-hmm. And that started to change in the, you know, and I don't know what the situation was at WWE, or especially in the early years. I don't want to suggest how that all came about, but in my case, whenever I would use a celebrity, it was either because somebody on my roster or somebody in my office had a relationship with them, and okay, it made it easy to have a conversation, or they reached out to us because so they were fans.
It did happen where guys would reach out. Can you think of one specific example where someone reached out to you guys and you were able to come to something on that?
Dennis Rodman.
Okay. Yeah. I mean,
Kevin Green.
Yeah. And it turned into good business for you guys on that sense. No doubt about that.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
So then let me ask you, in your opinion, who do you believe was the most important celebrity involvement in the history of pro wrestling? Is it Tyson?
For me, it is. Without having the data, because I'm not a data geek.
No, just on the eye test. On the eye test.
But just, and a lot of this has to do with my perception of really the Monday Night Wars. And I remember, John, I don't know if you've heard this story or not, but I remember exactly where I was. I could probably take you within 2 square feet of where I was standing.
Wow.
When I got a phone call from a friend of mine who's no longer with us. His name is Zane Bresloff. When Zane called me and said, because Zane had, he had his fingers inside of WWF at the time, it was WWF, WWE. He knew people inside that because he used to work there, and he still had a good relationship with some of them. And some of them were, a couple of them were, one of them in particular were very, very high level. And Zane called me because Zane worked for me at that point. I was out of town. And he said, Eric, you're not going to believe what WWE is doing. Now, keep in mind, at this point, I'm kicking your butt every week. I'm outperforming WWE. Nobody ever thought that that could happen. Nobody in the wrestling peripheral media thought it was, there was a chance, an Ice Cube's chance in hell that that would happen. And a year and a half later, I'm doing it. And I'm doing it every week, head to head, in a very profound and unambiguous manner. And I'm feeling cocky. I'm feeling good about myself. Hell, I just bought myself my own airplane. And I'm starting to build a house in Wyoming because I grew up watching Bonanza. But I get this phone call from Zane. He goes, oh, Eric, you're not going to believe what they're doing. And at this point, I'm going, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. We're kicking their butts every week. What else? Okay, Zane, what are they doing? because Zane was one of those guys that he just loved dirt. Like Zane Bresloff, Gary Juster, and Jim Barnett probably had more, spent more time talking on the phone than any 30 people combined inside of WCW at the time, because they're bringing in Mike Tyson. My cocky, overconfident attitude just drained from my body, because at that time, Tyson was hot. And he, more importantly, and you know how I feel about controversy, he was controversial. But he was the baddest man on the planet. Doesn't matter about Holyfield, whatever. I don't know if that happened before or after. Can't remember. Doesn't matter. I think it was before, actually.
It was.
Yeah, it was before. Because I won some big money on that fight, by the way. Big money on that fight. I'll talk about that in a minute. But when Zane told me that they were bringing in Tyson, I knew that that was a seismic shift in, well, I didn't know, but I believed, my instinct told me it was a seismic shift in the way Vince McMahon was going to go forward with his business. Keep in mind that the WWE's business model and creative strategy that accompanied it was to create cartoonish, over-the-top, larger-than-life characters that appealed to a teen and preteen audience because that was their demographic. Their licensing, their merchandising models was all built on that demo. Their advertising demos were built on that demo. The entire company was built on teen and preteen. But when Zane told me that they're bringing in Mike Tyson, there was no one more antithetical to that teen and preteen audience than Mike Tyson at that point. Mike Tyson was 18 to 49, 25 to 54 all day long. Thinking, wow, that's going to be interesting. And then when they proceeded to literally, along with Mike Tyson, using Mike Tyson, I think, in many respects as a platform, because they knew they'd be getting that 18 to 49-year-old audience that they typically didn't get because they were too busy targeting teens and preteens. But by bringing in Tyson, because of his notoriety and his mainstream celebrity, which is what we're talking about here, and because of the audience that Mike Tyson appealed to at that time, Vince McMahon knew, I'm assuming, we never had this conversation, but I'm assuming knew that, hey, we've got a whole platform here that we don't normally get, just like they have with Logan Paul, just like they did with Bad Bunny. What are we going to do with it? We're going to shift gears, and we're going to debut, premiere, or establish what became the Attitude Era. And they did it off the platform with Stone Cold Steve Austin and Mike Tyson and Mr. McMahon, who became Mr. McMahon in that moment, or as a result of it. So I think that was, and may go down in history. I don't know that they'll ever be. Look at Jerry Briscoe back there. I love Jerry Briscoe. Look at Shane McMahon. He looks like he's 12.
Yeah.
Shane couldn't even grow a mustache back then. That's awesome. I love Shane. He's a good dude. But I think that may go down in history as the most significant use of a celebrity, because it was, in my opinion, the platform to establish an entirely new creative strategy for the WWE that they knew they had to employ, because I was using that same strategy to thrash them each and every week. Or actually, not 83. It was 83 straight weeks, but it was a total of over 104 weeks.
Before we wrap our conversation, I want to flip the perspective just a little bit here. On the converse to that, we have seen some professional wrestlers break out and become crossover superstars. They themselves become the celebrities. Obviously, The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
John Cena has done that. It sure as hell looks like Sasha Banks is well on her way to becoming someone like that. And there were wrestlers on your roster who had their opportunities in Hollywood as well. Bill Goldberg, Kevin Nash.
Hulk Hogan.
Well, I was going to get to Hogan, but yeah, I'm going to get to Hogan. I was going to say, you know, Hogan is a guy that ultimately he has it, and then he comes back and he goes back to working full time.
And I mean, I threw that out there because of, you know, Hulk Hogan movies tend to be cult fan favorites for cult like reasons. But actually, Hulk was doing cult like movies prior to coming to WCW. So let's, we just gotta be, total transparency, 100% credibility on this show. We are legitimate. We have integrity. We acknowledge what we should acknowledge.
I guess my question is, geez, go ahead.
Throw that graphic up again, Mr. Nanny. Come on now. And that was while he was with WWE.
You just want to make that clear.
Yes. I didn't sign off on Mr. Nanny. I wish I would have. I wish I got a piece of it, though.
But look, WWE had WWE Studios for the longest time. They were cognitively trying to launch superstars. But is there a downside to that where guys then are no longer at your usage? Like, I think Roman Reigns is going to be a huge movie star one day. He's got the look. He's got the charisma. He's got the personality. But then that
he's
means
got the, he's got the contacts in Hollywood.
He's got the contacts in Hollywood. Yeah, he knows a guy.
He's actually related to a guy that can say, no, he's in my movie.
Yeah, he knows a couple guys.
Yes, sir,
but
Mr. Johnson, yes, sir. That's what, yes, sir.
But my point is, then they're no longer at your usage. Is there more upside to that than downside?
Look, if you've got somebody like, let's take MJF in AEW. MJF is what, 24 years old? 26?
I think he just turned 26, yeah.
Yeah. So you got MJF, who I think probably has the ability at some point in his life to play at whatever level of the entertainment business he chooses to. But if you're Tony Khan and all of a sudden MJF gets a part in an opportunity to be in a big movie, and once he does, you know he's not coming back, then yeah, it's bad. It's not a good thing for you. And yeah, maybe he can come back once or twice and you can tell everybody you helped create that star. But at the end of the day, he's not there for you. He's too busy making $15, $20, $30 million, or in the case of The Rock, I don't know, whatever he makes. But yeah, your guy that you used to have under contract for X amount of dollars a year is now making four times that much or 10 times that much for doing a movie. So that's not good. But you use John Cena. John Cena was at the end of his in-ring career. You know, if you really look back, and John is a friend of mine, number one, and he's a good dude. Forget all your, you know, negative wrestling fan. Yeah, but all that, throw all that out. He was really, really good for the industry. He was good for the industry in general, and he was really good for WWE. But I think even John, and I've never had this conversation with him, would say, yeah, but I didn't really break into movies in a serious way that compromised my WWE schedule until I was ready to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, Rock might have taken an early exit. Rock was probably closer to the apex of his popularity when he decided to make movies the full-time thing. Or he may have felt that he was on the downtrend, or just decided, look, before I start, you know, trending down, I'm going to jump off this train. As Dusty Rhodes used to say, I'm going to jump off this lightning bolt before it hits the ground and jump on another one. I love that saying from Dusty. I don't know if he made it up, but I always attribute it to him. So I think it all depends. This is my long-winded way of saying it all depends.
Well, and then look what bringing The Rock back in 2011, 2012, 2013 did for WWE. There was a lot of legit interest. He broke out in the Fast and Furious movies, came back as a big-time star, and now if he has one more match in WWE down the line, perhaps even imminently in the next few months at WrestleMania, think about the mass appeal and interest that will be in seeing him one last match, the biggest star in Hollywood. There's got to be something to that, too.
It's mind-numbing when you think about it. You know, my question is always, what does he really want to do? Because, you know, Rock's, I mean, beyond a physical specimen and is in incredible shape, and I'm sure many, many, many ways, perhaps limitless, like my good friend Chris Hemsworth, who's in the Limitless series on National Geographic as we speak. But he hasn't been bouncing around in the ring in a long time, and he's got stuntmen that, you know, take all the bumps that he's got to take in the movies. Does that guy really want to get in the ring and bounce around? Because a guy like Rock, who grew up as an athlete, a second generation wrestler, third, I don't know, a couple generations at least, does he want to go in there and have a match that isn't quite what his matches used to be? Guys like that, man, their pride, their ego, probably hard to separate the two at that level. They don't want to go out there and disappoint the audience or themselves. And then you have to ask yourself the question, can I really do it? because I've been out of that game for a long time. Wrestling isn't like riding a bike. It's more like flying an airplane. I know a lot about riding bikes, and I know a fair amount about flying airplanes. When you learn how to ride a bike, it becomes an instinct, and you can pretty much, until you're just too old to get up on a bike, ride a bike. You don't have to practice it much, and you're probably going to do okay. You can learn how to fly an airplane, as I did. You can become licensed in high-performance, complex aircraft, as I did. You can become licensed in said high-performance, complex aircraft with an instrument rating, which means you could basically fly blind, as I did. But I learned that if you don't fly at least three or four times a week, you start to lose that skill set. It's not like riding a bike. And if you don't do it every day, it's dangerous. And that, honestly, I don't know why I got off on this subject, but it's one of the reasons I sold my airplane. I learned the hard way that when I had the money, I didn't have the time to fly. When I had the time, I had to figure out a way to make more money, which meant I lost time. You know what I mean? It was hard. I wasn't retired. I wasn't independently wealthy. So I got to a point, you know, and somewhere in the early 2000s, where I said, look, I haven't flown in this plane in 3 months. I'm not sure I want to put my wife in this plane now. Hell, I'm not even sure I want to get in this plane now. That's when I knew it was time to sell the plane. And I think once, whether you're The Rock or you're John Cena, whomever, and you've been out of that business for a long time, and the temptation is to get back in it, you've got to be really, really prepared. And I'm sure I'm not saying anything that guys like Rock and John Cena don't know tenfold more than I do, but it's not as easy as people think, and it's dangerous.
Yeah. And then look, we might even get super meta where you see a Logan Paul versus a John Cena in a celebrity versus celebrity, part-time wrestler versus part-time wrestler match, which is not out of the realm.
That'd be weird. That's just weird.
But it could happen.
No, it could happen. I mean, creatively speaking, do I see it happening? Not like tomorrow. Not at
Logan Paul said in an interview this week that that's a match he wants. And I mean, man,
would that be wild?
Get a lot of interest. It would get a lot of interest. So this is a really cool conversation, Eric. I really like this. Anything else you want to add on top of it?
Nope. I'm heading to, and literally as this episode drops, I'm in Minnesota visiting my brother and my sister, and my nephew and his wife and, my wife's family, and enjoying Thanksgiving like I hope everybody else is. But even though you may be enjoying Thanksgiving, I'm glad you're listening to this show, because it typically drops on Thursdays. We all know what that's going to be like. But I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving and enjoys their time with friends and family.
Likewise here, get that turkey cooking, throw on Strictly Business as it bakes in that oven, or if you're smoking it, whatever you're doing, enjoy your Thanksgiving. We appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next week right here on Strictly Business.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.